From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. There's a new book about Florida's most influential women. Today we'll meet author Doris Weatherford, who recently published They Dared to Dream, Florida Women Who Shaped History. Doris Weatherford speaks to us about her book and some of the themes within it. Plus, a new USA Today analysis shows which former members of Congress still have campaign accounts. Some of them contain more than $500,000 each, and many of these lawmakers seem to have no plans to run for office again. We'll find out what they're doing with the money and what they can legally do with the money. That's ahead. First, this news.
Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Amy Tardiff. A USA Today analysis found at least 140 former members of Congress still have campaign accounts with nearly $50 million in them. Nearly a third of those former lawmakers have been out of office at least 5 years. For example, the Federal Election Commission says former U.S. Representative Mark Foley of Palm Beach County, who resigned in 2006 during a scandal, has more than $1 million in his campaign account. Former Fort Myers Republican Congressman Trey Radel still has about $165,000 in his campaign account, despite leaving Washington after pleading guilty to misdemeanor cocaine possession. We'll talk about campaign finance laws today and how active campaign committees exist, even though many politicians have not shown any plans to run for office again. Joining me is Larry Noble, senior counsel at the Campaign Legal Center, a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that defends and protects laws in campaign finance, voting rights, government ethics, and more. He also served as president and CEO of Americans for Campaign Reform, as the general counsel of the Federal Election Commission for 13 years, and he's an adjunct professor at the George Washington University Law School, where he teaches campaign finance law. Thanks for joining us, Larry.
Thank you for having me, Amy.
Also with us is Betty Parker, a freelance writer specializing in politics. Her Parker on Politics column appears in the Saturday editions of the News Press. Thanks for being with us, Betty.
Thanks for the invitation.
Join our conversation or ask a question by calling 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. Now, it doesn't sound like it should be, but Larry, the practice of keeping active campaign committees and active campaign accounts after leaving office is legal, right?
It is legal. They have to exist under some pretty strict restrictions on what they can do with the money, but and they are supposed to eventually wind down their campaigns, but nothing prohibits them from just keeping them going.
The USA Today analysis found former House members are spending their leftover money to pay for everything from luxury cars to foundations that bear their names. So where is the line drawn between legal and illegal use?
Well, they are not allowed to use the money for what's called personal use, and that is any expense they would have, irrespective of their being an office holder. So any expense they would have in their normal life, they cannot use their campaign funds once they're out of office. And that would include they cannot buy themselves a car. They cannot use it for travel, for a vacation. They can give the money to a nonprofit charity, a 501c3 charity, but in doing that, they have to make sure that they don't benefit from it in the sense that they're not getting paid by the charity or getting any other financial benefits from the charity. So those rules are pretty strict. And those personal use rules follow the money in terms of it being in the campaign account. And if they give that money, if they convert that campaign account into another political committee, they still can't use any of the funds they raised when they were a candidate for any personal use.
Is anyone policing that?
Well, that's a good question. The Federal Election Commission is supposed to. The Federal Election Commission is the federal agency that's charged with enforcing the federal campaign finance laws. But even their own chairman, Ann Revell, said recently they're a dysfunctional agency because they tend to split 3-3 on any major issue.
The analysis found Florida Republican Alan West, for instance, spent more than $17 million in his unsuccessful bid for a second House term, but he had enough leftover campaign cash to donate a combined $500,000 to two foundations. Before we get into the foundations, Betty Parker, what are you able to tell us, if anything, about Alan West?
Alan West was a Tea Party darling. His election surprised a lot of people when he first ran. He was running in what had traditionally been a Democratic stronghold in southeast Florida, and it was something of an upset when he won. He was known for his fiery speech-making. He's an eloquent, emotional speaker, and he had some very ardent, emotional followers.
Now, USA Today reports that one of the two foundations he gave money to is called the Alan West Foundation. The paper says that foundation shares a P.O. box in Boca Raton with the other foundation called the American Legacy Guardians, which may be being used for advocacy and supporting Republican candidates. Larry, is that okay?
Well, it clearly raises questions. He can give the money to a foundation he heads up as long as he doesn't benefit from that. So if he's getting paid by the foundation, they have to make sure they have enough money they raise from other sources to pay his salary. Also, if they're paying for any travel on his part or a use of a car, anything, they have to show that that money is not coming from the money that he transferred over there. And if the money he transferred over there is the major of all the money that's in that foundation, then that's illegal.
The analysis says nearly 30 former lawmakers with open campaign accounts are registered lobbyists. One of them is Cliff Starnes, a former House member from Florida who left office in 2013. Now, USA Today reports that Starnes has contributed funds from his campaign account, which it says has $1.5 million in it, to lawmakers with influence over issues he is being paid to lobby on. Do either of you see anything wrong with that?
Well, I see something wrong with it, but I generally think there's something wrong with the way lobbyists use political contributions. Now, when you're talking about a former member, it becomes all the more dangerous because they have all these connections to begin with. Now, you can use your campaign money to make contributions to other candidates, but here you have a situation where he is a former member and a candidate. And a lobbyist. And using this money, and that presents a particularly dangerous situation. Having said that, there's nothing illegal about it as long as he stays within the contribution limits.
And I was going to say that when you ask, is it wrong, we're talking about legalities and ethics.
Right.
A lot of people have issues with the way lobbyists give to lawmakers, and it's a very common practice. You know, a lot of lawmakers, virtually all their campaign money comes from lobbyists. That's legal. Other people might argue about the ethics of it.
We're speaking with Larry Noble, senior counsel with the Campaign Legal Center and former general counsel with the Federal Election Commission, as well as News Press political columnist Betty Parker. Of the 82 House members who were defeated or resigned from the last Congress, more than one in four had more than $100,000 remaining in their campaign accounts at the end of 2012. Join our conversation or ask a question about what they can legally do with that money by calling 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. Now, two of the most controversial Florida congressmen still have money in their campaign accounts. Let's talk about them. Betty, please first remind us about Fort Myers' own Trey Radel's time in Congress.
Well, Trey was in office for about 1 year before, and he was elected to an open seat, seat formerly held by Connie Mack, who left to run for Senate unsuccessfully. After Trey was in office about 1 year, he was arrested and, I believe, pled guilty to misdemeanor cocaine possession. He resigned that office and left. That was in January 2014, so it's barely been, it's been about a year and a half. And yes, he has about $160,000 left in his account. He also loaned his campaign account a lot of money, so he can repay himself those loans from that money, but for whatever reason he's chosen not to. Or he could do as others have done, like Mark Foley, he could give it on to some other politicians or equally likely a PAC. Sometimes it's easier for them to give to a PAC than to an individual politician.
Are his options, Larry, any different from any other congressman when it comes to what to do with that $165,000?
No, they're not really. Again, the personal use restrictions apply to money you raise, campaigning, whether you are out of office or in office. You know, when you mentioned that his legal problems, one thing he cannot do with the money is use any of it for his own legal defense. You know, when the law was first enacted, really what they expected them to do was either transfer the money to a political party, which they can do without limit. They can just give all the money to the political party. They can return it to their donors if they have excess campaign funds, but it's very rare you'll ever see somebody give up money that way. And then they can give it to a charity. And that was really supposed to be the idea of winding down your campaign with excess campaign funds. But they keep them going for a couple of reasons. One, some of them think they may run again. And if they do run again, they can transfer that money to their new campaign. And two, as we've been talking about, they can give it to other candidates within the contribution limit or to a PAC within the contribution limit. But it raises this kind of ugly issue of they're sitting on other people's money, if you will. I mean, this is the money that was donated for them to use for a specific purpose. And they just seem to be sitting on that money indefinitely.
I can't imagine how difficult it would be to figure out how to give it back to donors. So-and-so gave $500 and Betty gave $20 and so-and-so gave,
Well, the exact amount.
How do you do that?
They spend certainly a lot of money, most of them do, and then they're supposed to prorate it when they return whatever is left, if they choose to return.
So there's a formula?
You get back money on a prorated basis. I can tell you that I do know for a fact that a lot of people are asked if they want their donation back, and they say no, keep it, give it to the party, give it whatever. Anyway, they've given it to that candidate, and you may agree with this or not, but they say they gave it to the candidate, and that was that, and they don't want it back.
Well, that helps. Betty, while we're at it, tell us about former Congressman Mark Foley from West Palm Beach.
Mark Foley, again, he left under a cloud. He had sent inappropriate emails to teenage pages. He left in 2006. He was a congressman from Southeast Florida again. He did, while he was in the state legislature, he did represent parts of Lee County. He was very well known, very well liked. Mark has not closed the door on running again for office. He doesn't say he is, but he won't say he's not either, and very few politicians will totally close that door. In the meantime, he's been very politically active. He has given money to numerous politicians, mostly local in the Palm Beach County area, but he recently held an event for a U.S. Senate candidate from Florida. So most politicians apparently don't have many qualms about taking the money, and Foley is remaining active politically.
And the analysis showed he has more than $1 million in his campaign account as of June 30th. And apparently he was looking at the chances of this redistricting giving him a possibility of running again. Betty, do you think there's a chance that he actually will?
That's what stirred up the most recent round of interest with him, is this current redistricting that the legislature is doing as we speak. Mark, people ask him about it specifically in terms of the changes ongoing now. And again, he said it's not something he's planning, it's not something he's working on, but he never says never.
But you're seeing signs that he's active in this realm.
He's definitely active in politics, but it's been in the background as a donor, an organizer, a helper, not as a candidate per se.
What do you think when it comes to people like Trey Radel and Mark Foley and the clouded backgrounds and groups or people wanting their money?
Again, that's, you know, for Mark Foley has been, that his was 10 years ago. Trey was actually arrested and charged. That's probably a lot fresher in people's minds, and probably most people don't want him standing next to them on a stage, but they may well be willing to take his money. He can also feed it through PACs and through the party, and put some layers between him and the eventual recipient.
And, you know, and if I may, one of the other things they can do, which this group seems not to be doing, is convert their campaign fund into what's called a multi-candidate committee, so they can give it a good name, Floridians for a Better Government or something, and they can turn it into what's called a multi-candidate PAC. They have actually a higher contribution limit on what they can give to candidates. And it also it may serve in some ways, at least obscure a little bit, where the money's coming from, though the most people will know. But the reason they don't do that is once they transfer that money to a multi-candidate PAC, they can't use more than $5,000 of it for their own campaign if they decide to run again. And if you look at somebody like Foley, who has that much money, over $1 million in his account, even his talking or thinking or people speculating about his running may keep other people out of a race because he's sitting on a large war chest right now.
Now, comparatively, former Fort Myers Congressman Connie Mack only has $2,300 in his account. Does that say anything to either of you?
For me, that says it may be, they may figure it's more expensive to try to wind down the campaign than it is just to leave the money sitting there. No, I mean, they should just wind that down. They just have to file a report with the FEC, assuming he has no debts. To wind down your campaign, to close your account, you have to have no debts. And assuming he has no debts, it would just be easy to file what's called a termination report with the FEC. And when he does that, he no longer has reporting requirements. Right now, by keeping these campaigns open, they have reporting requirements, so they have to file regular reports with the FEC.
I can't add anything to that. I don't understand why you would keep it with just $2,000. That would be something Matt would have to speak to.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're speaking with Larry Noble, senior counsel with the Campaign Legal Center and former general counsel with the Federal Elections Commission, as well as News Press political columnist Betty Parker, about campaign finance accounts. Our number is 1-877-GCU-TALK. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or tweet using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. Do either of you think there should be an end date on these accounts?
I do, and the FEC has discussed it over the years, whether or not giving them 6 months or a year to wind down their accounts is sufficient. Frankly, in some ways it depends on the committee, because some committees end up with a lot of debt and have to go through a whole debt settlement process and get their settlement of their debts approved by the FEC. But if you have a surplus of funds, I think it's fair to say that within a certain period of time you should wind down and close the committee, even if it means transferring your money to a multi-candidate committee, a political committee that you're a PAC that you're going to control. I don't know why they need to keep them going like this.
And again, I agree with that. It seems like everything has to come to an end at some point, and I don't know why you would want to just keep going and keep going, especially when you just have little tiny amounts like that.
And the large amounts say something, I would think. Either you have hopes to run again, or you have hopes to influence somebody who's running again.
Right. And I think keeping the campaign account, at least in some cases, looks like an indication that they're thinking about running again. They may want to run again. And that is one justification for keeping it open for a while, is if you think I'm gonna run in the next cycle. But when it goes on for years and years, it seems like it's just excessive.
And it does certainly make the person something of a player. If everybody knows, say, Mark Foley is sitting on $1 million, a lot of people are going to be seeking out Mark Foley and asking him for support and help.
Larry, you mentioned that the FEC is looking at or has made attempts to change the law?
Now, in the past, when they've talked about the personal use of campaign funds and also what are appropriate wind-down expenses for a campaign. So there's a whole issue that comes up when a campaign is over, what can the candidate or the former candidate now spend the money on to close their campaign. So they can spend it on salaries for people to help close up the campaign, even small gifts. But it's limited in what they can spend it on. At one time, there was discussion of whether or not there should really be an endpoint for these campaigns, where you say you have to close the campaign, but the FEC has not imposed any such rule.
Go ahead.
Now, there's something Larry mentioned earlier, though, that interests me, and it's the matter of debt in a campaign. How long, and I'm not clear on this myself, but how long do candidates normally carry unpaid debt, say, to consultants after the campaign is over, and say they lost, they're not in office, but they still have a lot of debt hanging on for some years afterward?
You know, it can go on for a long time. They can try to carry that debt for years. The backstop on that is that it can become illegal. So if you don't pay your debt off and then the business does not use its ordinary procedures, what it would normally do with any other customer to try to collect the debt, then the FEC can find it an illegal campaign contribution to you. So at some point, you have to show that you really made efforts to pay off the debt, or the creditor has to show that they've made efforts to collect the debt. And if they haven't made efforts to collect the debt, they could have a problem. That is why the FEC has what's called debt settlement procedures. So if you want to try to settle a debt for less than the full amount, that even has to be approved by the FEC. Otherwise, it might be considered an illegal campaign contribution. But what we have seen over the years is the same vendor works with the same candidate, and then the candidate ends up with a debt after each election cycle.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was curious about. Okay.
Yeah, and that can become an illegal campaign contribution from the vendor if it looks like they're not doing it in the ordinary course of business.
And I just want to change tactics just a bit while we have a couple of minutes left, and we have you with us, Larry, for expert advice. This report came out yesterday. Florida taxpayers have apparently paid more than $500,000 in the last year to provide around-the-clock security for visiting governors, even though they were in the state to campaign for Governor Rick Scott. It was a report released Friday by the Florida Department of Law Enforcement that showed the state spent nearly $2.9 million on security expenses between July 2014 and June 2015. And most of that was to provide protection for Rick Scott and his wife, but the amount spent on guarding visiting governors and other officials shot up from slightly more than $100,000 to more than $530,000. And that was the bill for 9 visits by Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal and 11 trips by New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. And some of those trips coincided during the time when the two were campaigning for Scott's reelection. So why would taxpayers foot the bill for people coming here to campaign for our governor?
Well, that's an excellent question. I'm taking a look at the Florida law, and you know the Bureau of Public Safety says that they're responsible, along with the state from which the visiting governor is coming from, for the security. And you can understand why they feel that way about it. But there's a difference between who pays for it for an official trip and who pays for it for a campaign trip, because when the state or the taxpayers pay for that security for a campaign trip, it's really a form of public funding of campaigns, which I'm in favor of, but I'm in favor of it being done above board. And so when Christie comes in to help campaign for Scott, do the taxpayers want to pick that extra bill up? It's a very good question, but it does appear to be legal.
Okay. Well, and I'm interested in the fact that you are for it, and I guess there are people who would have said, I don't want to pay for that, but interesting when this came out yesterday.
Well, yeah, I just to be clear about it, I'm not necessarily in favor of doing it this way. I'm in favor of public funding of campaigns.
Okay.
So using taxpayer dollars, and there are a whole sorts of systems, matching systems or grant systems, where you give, and it basically reduces the reliance on large contributors. What I was saying is that this is a form of taxpayers, but a taxpayer funding of a campaign, but it's being done behind the scenes. It's being done through providing services to the campaign, if you will, security services to the campaign that the campaign should pick up. Or, let's be honest, that we have public funding in this.
When you looked at the report, was it obvious to you that it was public funding of campaigns?
Well, some of them said official business and some said personal business, and I'm not sure how they were dividing that out. I looked at the report, and if the personal business ones are ones where they are coming just for a campaign rally, then yes, it is. It's a form of public funding. Again, I'm not opposed to it. I'm not opposed to the security, but people should be aware of what's going on.
Betty, do you have anything to add on that factor?
No, he covered that really well. You can debate whether this is personal or whether it's campaign, but absolutely, the taxpayers are picking up the tab, and in the campaign, it's public funding of campaigns, and a lot of people are adamantly opposed to that. It's just not the direct payment that lays it out clearly.
And people should just know what they're paying for.
Right, and I think you also ask the candidate, if you're not in favor of public funding of campaigns, then why are you having the taxpayer pick up certain expenses of your campaign?
And that's all the time we have. And thank you both so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you.
Thanks.
Larry Noble is senior counsel at the Campaign Legal Center and former general counsel at the Federal Election Commission. He also teaches campaign finance law at the George Washington University School of Law. Betty Parker's a freelance writer specializing in politics at the News Press. Information about today's and all our shows are online at wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM. For Richard Chinqui, Jessica Mazaros, and Luke Martin, I'm Amy Tardif. Have a great afternoon.